Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. So you really dropped the voice there. But...
You know, I'm switching back to my normal register.
Yeah, because you normally have, normally have it so high for the other episodes, right?
Did you, Chris, did you happen to catch that YouTube video I recommended?
Which one was that?
It was the celebrity D&D.
Oh, yeah. I watched that just the other day.
I guess Chris Perkins is the dungeon master, and the celebrities, Ed Greenwood, R.A. Salvatore, and Larry Elmore.
Yeah. That was pretty good. It was interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was a good representation of, I guess, the hobby.
Yeah. I think you were saying that when you sent me the email, you said it's a good representation. I think
you said exactly that. It's a good representation of the hobby.
You just said. No.
Yeah, I think I was recalling the email essentially. I really liked how I phrased that.
No, but I think, I said it was, it had a few good jokes here and there. It's not something that I probably would have watched if you hadn't said you should watch this. But but I think you're right. It really does show a good sample of what it's like to play role-playing games.
Yeah, we'll link it for people. So people who are less familiar with what happens at a gaming table, I think it provides a pretty decent insight. There's probably less snacks on the table. They're all drinking water as opposed to
beer or something.
Pop or something. Yeah. We never drink beer.
No, not when we game. I'm sure some people do,
on occasion,
though.
But
also, I don't mean like in general. I meant just when we game, we tend to be, I don't know, more snacky and stuff.
Well, there was the one aggressive German who got really drunk too. That was fun. Yeah. Are you listening?
Yeah, and got angry at me for buying the small size beer. A tip for the listeners: when a German asks you to buy a large can, even if the supermarket doesn't stock it or is sold out,
go to where you can find a large can.
Or it's better think they'll settle for the normal size can.
It's better
of beer.
To come back with nothing and say they didn't have it.
I don't know. That's tempting fate right there.
I think he did say, "You don't buy me anything." I like at the end after he found, when he calmed down and he goes, "But you can understand why I was upset." No, I don't understand.
I should probably say in that when I said that the video wasn't all that interesting, it's more because I don't think watching other people game is really that interesting of a thing. Gaming yourself is.
I'll agree with that.
So. But yeah,
like even as a gamer, kind of watching that, I was kind of like, "Yeah, this is kind of boring," you know. Like I watched all of it, and even watched like parts 2 and 3, and I think parts 2 and 3 get a little more interesting for a viewer. But I do agree with Lyle and you, Chris, and it is. For people who don't know what it would look like to see people roleplay, that's a good representation.
Yeah.
Just people sitting around, telling a story, rolling dice.
It's also good, you can get some pretty good ideas, because Chris Perkins is a good DM.
I said before, I'd like to see him outside of, like a setting like that.
They do have an audience.
Yeah, they have an audience.
So
they
are playing to the crowd as well.
Yeah,
right. And that's it, I'm sure he's very intimate with the material. He probably wrote it himself, so.
Well, probably. I just think as Lyle said, I'd like to see him where he wasn't sort of playing it up.
I didn't say that. You said that.
No, well, you said they were playing to an audience.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I'd like to see him where he wasn't essentially, in my opinion, playing up to an audience.
Yeah.
But why?
What
would you want to see? I'm sure he would still use voices.
I'm sure
he would still use those descriptions of, the mood and the setting.
Yeah, I don't think much would really change.
I think things were, maybe it was just the kind of encounter or adventure they're running. I think things were going very quickly.
Well, there's also, because it's kind of a guest group, it's almost like a con game in that the people don't really know each other. If it was a group like we have here, there'd be a lot more joking and goofing around.
I didn't necessarily mean to want to see that. I mean, like the kind of the story he was telling was progressing very quickly. It seemed like, okay, make a perception roll. Oh, and you see all these guys, and he just kind of puts them down on the mat. And maybe it's just me. I would have liked to see a bit more story. Where, I guess, you can't really do that for a convention.
I will say, it was an encounter. It wasn't a campaign.
Yeah. Well, then I liked the build-up that he did. Sorry,
when you watch the video, you're going to see basically a combat, which does play a large role in most games that people play, but it's not the only thing that you do. So it was pretty much get right into the encounter, as you said, Chris, or the combat.
Yeah.
And so you get to see that. But I think it was good that you see that there's still a lot of conversation that goes on. And harkening back to the villains episode, it's also a good example of how somebody could work in, like a conversation or the kind of the back and forth, the verbal back and forth between the heroes and the villains.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was a little, and there was a little bit of preamble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked the preamble. I thought that was good.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. No, I watched that and I thought, wow, I want to play D&D right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fourth edition.
Yeah, I could play fourth. I'm not a 4E hater.
Yeah, right.
I happily would have continued playing 4E.
So, I shrugged. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Just conveying that in the audio medium of the podcast. Sorry.
The creaking of your shoulders.
Yeah, we'll have to put in a sound effect or something.
Bones clattering, maybe.
Yeah, I can't remember why I even stumbled upon that.
Hmm.
I think I was looking. You ever watch those unboxing videos?
I try to avoid them, but
I think I was looking at for unboxing videos, and that came up because they're using the red box. I'm guessing that's how
you watch unboxing videos.
Nah, not very much.
You could just I watched yourself, didn't you?
No, I watched the Game of Thrones card game unboxing video because they explained what the rules were. I was thinking about getting that game. So.
Okay,
it was all right. But sometimes I notice they have unboxing videos for like computer games.
Yeah,
that's pretty lame.
Well, what do you do there? Here's a manual, and they have the
CD.
Game. It's on CD format.
Lots of packaging and.
Yeah, at least if you buy like a box set or of a board game or a board game or a box set of a role playing game, there's different components.
Toys.
You know whether or not there's miniatures or not, or is it flat tokens?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the video game is just like what?
Yeah.
I've watched a couple unboxing videos and kind of like assembly guides for some like Privateer Press figures.
Like you said, with the figures
the
and games
come
that,
out.
Yeah, that makes sense because you can also see the quality of what you're going to be buying.
Yeah, I think that's
well.
What it was. So. And they even say,
Games Workshop switch to Finecast.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one guy he unboxed some of the Finecast. He unboxes a Finecast Terminator, compares it with the Metal Terminator.
Oh, yeah, that was good. I saw that.
Yeah, that's good.
Apparently, Finecast isn't doing so well. They're having lots of delays and production problems.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you look in the Maelstrom Games website, it says they're having trouble getting stuff from Games Workshop as a supplier because Games Workshop is backed up and having production troubles.
Wow.
I noticed on Facebook there's a boycott Games Workshop, and it was for 1 month. And then people kind of pointed out, 1 month's not really going to make... So it's now 2 months. So... I haven't joined the boycott, but I like to check just to see. Because they have some good news on, not good news, but they have some updates on Finecast. And whether or not the quality is it as good as the company is saying. Yeah, they're saying there's a fair amount of miscasts.
Is Finecast taking away GW's market or something?
No. Finecast is GW. GW is switching over to
they're dropping metals entirely.
Oh, wow.
They're no longer doing that.
So it's plastics or resins?
Yeah. It's some kind of quote-unquote special resin that they've
Finecast
developed.
Finecast is the resin.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's what they're calling it, Finecast.
So in other words, if you buy a GW box, now it has a big this Finecast.
Is it more expensive? Is that why people are boycotting it?
The annual price increase occurred at the same time.
Uh-huh.
So a common misconception was, yes, there is a price hike for these Finecast things, even though the production cost of making plastic miniatures is less than metal miniatures.
Interesting.
Which has caused some backlash because of the timing of these two things.
Oh. I always actually liked the plastic ones better than the metal.
Me too. Yeah. I found they're easier to...
easier to convert.
Easier to convert and to use and to stick together
because
it was lighter, so you didn't have to pin stuff or use the two-part epoxy.
Yeah.
But
I thought they looked better too, especially because large swaths of my army was unpainted, so the plastic you can see detail better than the shiny metal.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's neither here nor there.
Yep. Well, that's the big story in miniature news.
Mm.
But we are actually, I know we were going to save this for the end of the podcast, but we are going to have an episode on miniature gaming.
Mm-hmm.
but in a couple months.
Yeah, probably won't be for a couple months yet.
Because if you check the forum, Wayne is trying to drum up interest in a War Machine Hordes.
Yeah.
Demo game? Yeah. Demo convention?
Yeah, you can call it a demo convention. Basically, what I'm going to try and do is get people interested in the game by sort of running them through small games. And it is, I'm not going to play. I'm just...
host.
Yeah, I figure the easiest way to learn the game is just to play it.
Yeah.
Especially a complicated miniatures game. And, having someone explain the rules to you, it's not going to make sense. Where if I could just kind of, sort of like a trial by fire, just, okay, step one, everybody do this, and I'm going to try and, I have four people so far, so I'm going to try and run sort of two games at the same time. You guys just play against each other.
I would crush all opposition.
It's funny how you're not playing the Russians, but you're going to use a Russian.
Actually, he's playing as Kato. Russian.
Oh, you are playing the Russians. Oh, okay.
So there.
I'm playing the Southerners. I'll break you. What we got here is a failure to communicate.
I must break you.
So, I also watched, I ordered two movies on Discus, which is kind of like the Japanese Netflix. Mm-hmm. And one was Mutant Chronicles, because I do the research, and that was the missing link of the RPG movies. So movies based off of role, pen and paper role-playing games.
And?
It starts off really well.
Mm-hmm. that says it all right there. It starts off great.
Well, it's kind of like a retro tech, the steampunk, and kind of harkens back to World War One. So it's really got those kind of trappings.
Yeah.
The mega corporations, but everything looks steampunkish. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the battles are more, the uniforms are more World War One than World War Two. Mm-hmm. And it starts in little trench warfare. Not a big spoiler. They make some changes to the story. Mm-hmm. But that's fine. I'm not sure why they needed to make those changes to the story, but they did. And, it starts off with Bauhaus, the Germans, versus Capital, the kind of Americans fighting. And then the Dark Legion make their appearance. Mm-hmm. And I thought if they kind of just stayed in the battlefield and made it more of a...
war movie?
I'm going to say made it more of a horror movie, but I guess they did try to do that. But then they kind of switched it up a bit.
Yeah.
And kind of made it an adventure movie towards the end.
With, a band of heroes going through
a
series, a trial series, similar to, Indiana Jones or something?
Yeah, it's like a band of heroes going through, a dungeon.
Wow.
Wow.
So they turned it into
you really guessed that by saying... and the screenwriting, it's not so much that the story was bad, although I did find it derivative, but some of the lines they had to say were pretty...
Say hello to my little friend.
Oh, they may as well have said that. Yeah. But it's I don't know if they said war is hell, but about stuff like that. Yeah.
Combat is heck.
Give me a cigarette, We'll drink today because we're going to die tomorrow. I don't know if these are actually lines, but...
they could be.
I can't remember the lines, but... But, it did have a lot of potential. I was pretty excited when it started, and for the first few
minutes.
I know, maybe about the first 15 minutes, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it's going to be pretty good. Hmm. And I will say this, it's very dark and murky, mm-hmm. but you can actually make out everything. Mm-hmm. I didn't find, sometimes Aliens versus Predator 2,
yeah.
it's so murky that you can't make out anything, so you don't know who's the alien, who's the predator. Mm-hmm. So you can actually make out everything quite clearly all through the movie, so well done there.
Call it the production values in terms of costumes and stuff.
And again, it looks like they spent enough money that they could have told
the writers
the story. So and I also thought it was good that you can actually convert it. So if somebody was a big fan of Warhammer 40K, I think that's a bit more of a challenge, but they have more of a potential audience because Warhammer 40K has had a lot more players than Warzone or Mutant Chronicles. But it was promising. You get kind of decent actors in it, and you don't need to, lavish too much. Mm. I mean, I thought the steampunk looked real good. So.
Mm. Oh. I'd have to see it just for that, then.
I'd give it a shot.
Yeah. And the other movie was Serpent in the Rainbow. That's preparation for today's episode.
Yeah. Which I didn't think was all that bad.
Yeah.
It was all right.
So, Shepherd in the Rainbow is about voodoo.
Yes.
Voodoo, that voodoo, that.
So we do voodoo so well. Today.
And I guess a little information on why we do voodoo. Because when we were sort of coming up with ideas, the idea I had was, I essentially stole this from the role-playing game Scion. Mm-hmm. And the idea was, why not focus on a pantheon of gods and sort of incorporated them into a game, and everybody seemed to like it. Until I said the first one I wanted to do was Voodoo. And then it was
like, oh, there's no I in podcast, by the way.
All right, fine.
I notice when we have an idea, it's our idea. But when you have an idea, I.
All right, all right.
Go on, sorry.
So anyway.
There is an I on Scion, though.
Yeah, are you sure? All right. Yeah. I forgot what I was saying now. Anyway. So anyway, the point is the first one we're doing is Voodoo. And I guess we came up with Voodoo, we, because we wanted to do a pantheon that was relatively either unknown. I mean, when you say the word voodoo, people immediately think of zombies and sort of black magic and
little dolls with pins.
Yeah, little dolls with pins, and that's not actually the case. You know, that's just one very small aspect of voodoo.
Or not.
Or not, yeah. Not at all. And as Lyle said, with the movie The Serpent and the Rainbow, either that or voodoo is kind of like a catch-all for whatever kind of evil black magic you want to chuck on somebody.
Yeah, yeah, I was...
Really?
I was reading that. Like,
I mean, not all the time, but it can be.
I checked...
Sorry, do you mean in The Serpent and the Rainbow?
Similar to The Serpent and the Rainbow. I would argue that most of the voodoo in that movie... was evil or negative.
I looked on the Wikipedia article for it, and it gave a list of some different references in media and such, and though I hadn't seen much of there, almost all the ones that I did see, you know, voodoo was the...
I was talking specifically Serpent and the Rainbow.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sorry.
Because I actually thought the movie had a different angle, but I'll bring that up a little bit later.
That one, I didn't watch Serpent and the Rainbow, but that one specifically was listed as perpetrating the myth that voodoo is evil or black magic. Of course, I didn't see it to say, but...
I would kind of agree with that, but...
Oh, am I supposed to explain why I disagree? Because I was just going to say, I thought it focused on kind of the chemistry behind zombification.
Oh, yeah.
It's based on a novel of a botanist, but I think it's more specialized than just botany, who was trying to figure out how some guy in the 60s apparently died and then came back, like 16 years later. And basically saying he had been zombified, and basically botanist was trying to figure out how you would do that and how to reproduce that through different toxins. So,
yeah.
So I thought a lot of it was, and I think Wes Craven perhaps.
Yeah, when I saw that name of like Wes Craven, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, you know? Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street. Right, yeah. It kind of made it more of a horror movie, I suppose. I didn't get that Serpent in the Rainbow was portraying voodoo as evil.
Okay, I'll...
And they did kind of explain some stuff that I think is consistent when we get into the overview of voodoo. I thought it was consistent with voodoo and the Haitian faith. Yeah.
I agree. So speaking of which, how about the overview then?
How about that?
All right, so voodoo actually comes from a faith in West Africa. I believe the country is Benin. And then the voodoo that most people are familiar with are either Haitian voodoo or Louisiana or New Orleans voodoo. And,
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, all right. And, so Haitian voodoo, as you would imagine, originated in Haiti in the 16th century from the merging of beliefs between the West African voodoo and the Roman Catholic Christianity. Basically, it was a way that the slaves could sort of continue to practice their own faith while giving the impression that they were following Christianity. And then it... No, okay. Then it kind of came over...
I was just going to say, it's a syncretism.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good word. Remember that one. So, and then it came over to Louisiana. So they're actually a little bit... They're similar, but... this is why I wasn't going to run that Musketeers one, because I didn't want to hear Chris's French accent all the time.
I actually resisted for the first 5 minutes, and then I just gave in.
All right, so anyway, so Louisiana voodoo is slightly separate. It's kind of a mixture of the two, because, slaves came over from Haiti to Louisiana, but they're already West African slaves in there. And
they're kind of like a re-merging with the old.
Not really, because I think the two had actually kind of diverged already. So, but then after the Haitian Revolution in like 1791, a lot of either refugees or immigrants came over from Haiti and kind of helped fix it up. I guess it's kind of the division you would see between.
You've thrown out the dates and everything. That's cool.
You do the as Lywood said. I do the research. <you know? laughs> So anyway, that's basically it.
Cool.
In terms of like a historical sort of thing.
Okay. So.
But what about the fate itself? So it's kind of a pretty big.
Oh, yeah. So,
So basically, like about the actual gods versus like the spirits, okay. The Loa.
So yeah, as Lyle said, the idea between voodoo is that God is unreachable by humans, or he's entered some kind of state where he no longer interacts with the mortal world, and these spirits.
I like how you were gesturing to the sky.
No, I was trying to catch an insect.
Oh, really? Oh, sorry, I didn't see the insect. I thought you were.
Yeah, you thought I was getting into the spirit of voodoo, gesturing to the sky.
God, smack!
Yeah. I thought you were like preaching it to us. No. So
I
was like,
well, I can get all preachy if you want. So anyway, there are these intermediary spirits called Loa. Or I think they're also called like the Invisibles or Mysteries, and my French pronunciation is horrible.
Mystery.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, sorry. Were you trying to speak French?
No, I wasn't trying because I know my French pronunciation is terrible. So anyway,
he was trying to pronounce it in French, not speak French.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, there's these intermediary spirits who sort of obviously go between God and humanity, very similar to the saints in Christian belief.
From what I read, yeah, that was their, sorry, syncretism. Syncretism was that they dressed up the Loa as saints,
yeah.
To hide it.
Yeah, that's essentially what they did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like they all have an equivalent to a Catholic saint.
Yeah.
I actually really like that about the god in that it's a pandeist.
Yeah.
They were saying, new word for me there, but
yeah, me too.
It was interesting that means that the God is the universe and also is the creator of the universe. And it's kind of cool because it answers a question as to why God created the universe but doesn't interact with it. Mm. It's kind of that it's not a matter of interaction. He is the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's different beliefs. I mean, not only in voodoo and everything, where either like God created the world and then kind of became the world mm-hmm. or the universe, or God always just kind of was the universe. So
it's an interesting answer to that, that why doesn't God come down and do stuff.
No, I agree, and kind of speaking about the saints thing, one of the things I thought was interesting is that while sort of the West African spirits, the Loa, kind of got a saint kind of wrapping mm-hmm. to kind of hide them from the slave masters, it also went the other way in that sort of Catholic saints who actually weren't Loa to begin with have become Loa in mm-hmm. the Haitian voodoo religion. So kind of the religions ended up sort of giving to each other to the point where they're by no means mutually exclusive. Like from what I read, most people in Haiti kind of don't consider voodoo and Catholicism to be at odds with each other while they practice both.
And that's why I thought Serpent in the Rainbow did, I hesitate to say accurate, but at least was, I guess, gave a fair representation where the one character says Haiti is, what, 95% Catholic and 110% voodoo?
Yeah, I think that was the quote, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, so they did, I thought they presented that quite well.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Where they showed that, yeah, they weren't at odds with each other, and they had combined them.
Yeah, there was even the scene where, I forget the Loa's name, but there's like a procession with, you know, the statue of the Virgin Mary, and they're carrying it down, and the guy says, oh, why are they worshipping the Virgin Mary? And they said, oh, here she's known as, and I forget the name she has, but, yeah.
I think it was Orzuli Freda, one. But I can't remember what she said in the movie, but yeah.
Neither can I.
It kind of sounds like it was her, like the Black Madonna.
Yeah, they're the same thing. They're one and the same. They're not separate entities.
Yeah.
So I agree, they didn't always show voodoo in a negative light, but in terms of the magic, if you will, that happened during the movie, that was very kind of dark and definitely evil.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree they didn't show it in a sort of a negative light, but.
No, I understand. They didn't necessarily show the faith in a negative light, but there were certainly characters, or at least one character in the movie that could be like, you know, your evil voodoo witch doctor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he was the one pretty much throwing around the spells, if you will.
Yeah.
But there was the other person
who protection charms and stuff.
Yeah. Who was familiar with the different, you know, chemicals and toxins that you needed to do to create the zombification.
Cool.
But I guess just this is the first time we're doing a Pantheon Pandemonium.
Yeah.
And basically that's the overview. So rather than just talking about the Pantheon in general, what we'd like to do is pull out what is special about voodoo and talk about that. And not necessarily unique to this particular religion or Pantheon, but just what really stands out is
stuff that jumps out.
And then we'll basically talk about how we can use that in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll go first. One thing that really stood out for me was the kind of the trademark items the different Loa had.
Mm-hmm.
So like kind of like, for example, Papa Legba has, you know, the cane and the straw hat and pipe, and Barasimidi has the top hat and sunglasses.
Can I interrupt here for a second?
Sure.
While I was doing this research, I can totally see my dad as Barasimidi.
Because he has a skull face?
No, I was ready for this, right? And not only because my dad is black, but because, like, I'll go.
Please say he doesn't wear a top hat.
No, I'll go down the list, right?
Does he wear sunglasses?
He wears sunglasses all the time. To the point where you go to the movie theater, he's still wearing sunglasses.
Get out of here.
No, no lie. You call up my family and ask them. My dad always wears sunglasses. He always has a cigar in his mouth, and he frequently drinks rum and or bourbon. So if you did give him a top hat, he would be Barasimidi.
And a skull face.
All right, fine.
No, but actually, but you can say that, like, he is Barasimidi in this faith, in that when somebody is kind of possessed, or what do they call it? They ride him as a horse?
Yeah, it's called riding a horse.
Riding a horse. Uh-huh. And basically, Barasimidi takes possession of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
They'll ask for these items, and or when they show signs that they are possessed, they'll be given the items,
mm-hmm.
and then the possessed person will then have these. I just thought that was maybe not unique, but certainly quite special, is that any person that's possessed and then takes upon these certain characteristics, not only the behavior, but the certain physical trappings.
Yeah.
And like the one that we mentioned before, the kind of the spirit of love and beauty, Urzuli Freda, they'll give her like a mirror and a comb and jewelry or fine clothes.
Yeah, and they're not even like religious items in the sense of like other faiths where, you know, these items are holy or whatever.
Symbols.
They're just regular things. Like Barasimidi would, you would probably give him like a shot of rum and cigars, right? Or
I get possessed by this guy all the time.
Or they're also kind of supposed to have like traditional foods that they eat, or sometimes services that you have to perform based on which Loa you're summoning, or which Loa has come down.
Interesting.
So
yeah, so they have the summoning idea and getting possessed, and I guess if you look, I guess you could see in Christianity, you do have the speak in tongues, but a lot of times possession is seen as a bad thing, if you're possessed by a spirit. But here it can be quite positive. And then, if you imagine somebody who's speaking in tongues in a Christian faith, then you say, oh, who are you? Are you Elijah or something? And then they would give whatever would represent Elijah. Mm. And then that person continues to ride, the spirit continues to ride the horse, and they have those trappings. And I thought that was, that's a nice, I hesitate to say, touch to it.
It
definitely did stand out. And they're also modern items. Like sunglasses are fairly modern. And
well,
that's
relatively
one.
Relatively modern faith, isn't it?
Well, yeah, kind of around like the 16th century for Haitian voodoo.
Yeah.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But again, kind of similar to what I said about.
But it also updates itself at times. Yeah.
Which I think is, I don't know, I think that's kind of interesting for a religion, you know, kind of constantly incorporating sort of new things into it.
That was one of the things that it took from Catholicism, wasn't it? That it incorporated the saints, but as in the saints were real people, so it became that real people could also become Loa.
Yeah.
So again, that's similar to Catholicism.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are interesting items because a lot of times we focus on symbols, and then in a game we think of them as like channeling
or
like power.
Like power.
Yeah, or some kind of power. But a lot of times they can just be identifiers. So if you see somebody in a cane, straw hat, and pipe, then you're like, oh, that's Papa Legba, like kind of the gatekeeper, or at least an agent of Papa Legba. So maybe perhaps I know there was some people think that Robert Johnson, the blues player, the guitarist, that he made a deal with either the devil or he made a deal with Papa Legba.
Uh-huh.
Because Papa Legba, you often find him at the crossroads.
Oh, okay.
And the story with Robert Johnson is,
he
wanted to be the greatest guitarist ever. So he made a deal with the devil or Papa Legba.
Mm-hmm.
And that he would have that ability, but then in 10 years he died.
Yeah.
But if you see that person has those trappings, you know who it is. So it could be an identifier that this person is an agent of such and such. Now, a lot of times, you know, the devil, horns, hooves, the tail.
Smell, brimstone.
Yeah, the smell. But even, like, those mundane items, I think, would be quite interesting. Or, like, for example, if the guys, these agents are always smoking cigars and always have sunglasses on.
Even at night?
Even at night. Mm-hmm. Then you know, okay, that's who I need to approach.
It's either Papa Legba or Wayne's dad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly the same thing, yeah.
Wayne, why does this guy keep asking me about death and healing?
Dad's weird, man. Yeah.
Keeps telling me his mom's got cancer, wants me to do something about it. You did tell him he's not a doctor, right? But yeah, like Baron Samedi, so they represent Baron Samedi. And it doesn't mean that they have, I mean, if you completely divorce that from...
Wait, sorry, which one was Baron Samedi?
He's the kind of low of death.
Okay.
But also healing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so he's the skull face guy. Yeah. With the top hat.
Which one was Papa Legba?
Wayne's dad.
Papa Legba is the guy with the cane and the straw hat.
Gatekeeper. I got the gatekeeper.
He's St. Peter. Papa Legba would be St. Peter.
I see.
That's the saint he's most often associated with. Because St. Peter, gates of heaven?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll say the.
But I always think of Heimdall.
Oh. Yeah. I was going to say, interestingly about Papa Legba, in like the William Gibson novels, the voodoo culture features prominently, Papa Legba is kind of the gatekeeper to cyberspace as well.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's cool. So when the Loa are riding the horse, as they say, how long does this last? Because I was reading that they held rituals, and it was kind of an all-night ritual where these would happen. But is it, because you were mentioning something about agents, or if you meet this guy often, I'm just thinking in game terms, if it's somebody who would always be with sunglasses and a cane, or if it would just be an occasional thing.
I guess you could kind of do it either way. Like, in the game,
he could keep changing.
Which I thought would be a really interesting thing. You know, you meet this guy one day, and he's kind of a straight, like, businessman in a suit, and the next time you see him, he's got on sunglasses, and, you know, he's doing some strange Louisiana accent or something.
Yeah, the guy sits down at your table, who's that? And then he lights his cigar, and then takes the sunglasses out of his front pocket.
Yeah.
Which Wayne didn't mention, but which sometimes Wayne's dad's cigar is in this front
pocket. Yeah, to the point where, like, we're getting on the bus, like, Dad, better put the cigar out. He'll knock the ash off his cigar, drop it into his pocket, and then get off the bus, take out the cigar, and light it up again.
Dude, your dad is awesome.
But if Wayne's dad was Baron Samedi, he would, like, you know, pull the sunglasses out and cover it in cigar ash, knock that off, put them on. And then, I guess, like, have one of those pop-up top hats.
Yeah.
Do you think that would add to or take away from a game where the character, where you maybe gave information of relevant Loa, and the characters, the players have to look up that information when they're meeting with the different ones?
I could see it kind of going both ways. Like, kind of, I guess, similar to like the TV show Supernatural, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you could interact with one of these Loa or someone being ridden by them, and you could say, okay, that guy has Baron Samedi, but like the top hat, the cigar, and the sunglasses.
Yeah.
And so long as you kind of drop hints that he's important, or, you know, have other things along the way, such as, I believe they're called like Bebe, or like Vive, spelled like V-E-V-E, which is kind of the traditional symbol that's drawn out during certain rituals specific to each Loa. Basically, if there's some other way you could sort of say, hey, that's important, drop hints, people might start researching, and then you could drop that in, and then they could figure out, hey, we were dealing with this Loa because of these items or the things he wanted.
Yeah, I think what I was saying specifically is, for example, in Vampire the Requiem, when you use the Auspex power, you can see how someone's feeling, and it's represented as a color.
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting because it's immersive. You know, you're always in the game world. But Yujiro, for example, didn't like that because whenever you heard the colors, you'd have to look up on a sheet what they were. So I think it'd be, as long as you introduced it in-game, who these different Loa are, so that players would have a fresh memory of it, then that would be better.
I think it depends what you were going for.
I think sometimes...
Maybe it's getting a little too mechanical for the discussion we're having.
No, not at all. I think those are great examples because, yeah, just people who aren't familiar with Auspex, yeah, there's one where it's an aura perception.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're successful, you can see the person's aura, which would be different colors and
shades patterns.
Shades and that. And that gives you a clue, not only how they're feeling, but perhaps who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a decision you have to make as a storyteller is whether or not you just give them the color and the shade, which, as Chris said, is very immersive.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you give them the color, the shade, and then just tell them, and that means he's lying, or that means he's happy, right, or angry. And it's the same as a vampire, and all White Wolf games, really. They have a pretty extensive lexicon.
Mm-hmm.
So as a storyteller, do you just like kind of try to stick to that lexicon and drop these slang words that are in game, but we wouldn't necessarily use in the real world, mm-hmm. for vampires. And again, it's like, I think at first, yeah, the players are always going to be looking it up.
Yeah.
But if you can stick to it and the players are fine with that, mm-hmm. as I would say, definitely, like, at least first, yeah, make them look it up, because I think that'll have a bigger payoff. Mm-hmm. And it won't be in, like, months' time. I think in just only a few sessions.
I reckon so, yeah.
But I think
if you
kind of try to do
one or the other.
Or if you got to do one or the other. Yeah. If you keep flip-flopping, then they're never going to get it. Mm-hmm. And then they're always...
And they'll never really be into it either.
Right.
I think specifically for the Loa, though, introducing who they are in-game. Like, for example, we said if you're sitting down to dinner and this guy comes out as the Baron, I forgot the full name, but...
Smitty.
Thank you. Yeah. And maybe there's other people at the dinner and they can, like, whisper to the characters, oh, right now he's this mm-hmm. guy. And
well, I think it depends what kind of...
I think just mentally, like, that people, if they're learning about the world, they're just, it's more likely to remember it than something they've seen on a piece of paper.
No, that's true. I think it depends what kind of story you're trying to tell. Sorry to cut you off.
Sure, but like,
if the players are going into, sort of this story and you haven't made it clear that whatever pantheon, in this case voodoo, is going to play a large part in your story, then yes, you probably would have to present it. If you set them up with the idea that, okay, you know, voodoo is going to play a large part in this story, then I guess it's kind of like player knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. Character knowledge, right? If the characters sort of should know what's going on, then I would say they would you would have to present it.
Yeah, and I think that's probably for the best.
Where if the characters kind of wouldn't.
As they always say, you know, in literature, in film, show it, don't say it.
Mm.
Yeah, and I just to broaden it out, even, yeah. like, again, like, you could just take the you know, the kind of the possession and the trademark items mm-hmm. and... you know, apply it to just a fantasy pantheon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
As long as the person who should know knows that happens. So if you have a bunch of warriors who are pretty ignorant or pretty apathetic or to different religions and different rituals mm-hmm. within that world, because that's the characters they made, then yeah. I think that's fine. But you know, the whoever's playing the cleric or the priest mm-hmm. or
Holy
whoever
warrior,
should be aware that this happens, mm-hmm. and this is how the avatars manifest themselves, or how the gods speak to people. They actually don't use a burning bush or whatever. They just ride normal people.
Yeah,
and then they'll use these items. But I think you could actually introduce it quite quickly, and you have like the guy sits down, and I'll default to the voodoo faith. But you know, a man's not be recognizing Baron Samidi mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm.
I was on the spot there.
It'd yeah, like be a hard game to run just because that's a hard accent to do.
But I was thinking I was thinking the same thing.
When
yeah.
a man speaks to Baron Smitty, he speaks with a little more respect. And actually, Baron yeah. Smitty's quite profane, so he probably would...
throw in some curves.
I'm probably doing more yeah. Baron Lacroix, more sophisticated and suave.
Also
that's
rather
my
like
default
my
personality.
yeah.
I just don't want to like be really profane on the podcast.
Or stereotypical.
There it is. They say Baron Samidi is...
yeah, I was talking about the accent, but...
I thought that was pretty decent on the spot.
That's for sure.
All right, oh, sorry, I didn't add, at the end. The man that speaks to Baron Samidi,
That's what would have put it over the edge.
That's pretty funny. Now, I was kind of thinking the same thing in terms of just having... whatever game you're playing, even like yeah. fantasy, yeah, give those sort of trademark items to the deities.
Or yeah. and then once they're kind of on board with that, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, okay, we're really familiar with Papa Legba, but then, you know, and I can't really think off the top of my head why Izuli Freda would come into your story, you know, mm-hmm. about love or something like mm. that, or luxury or whatever. Yeah. But this person with a comb and a mirror or really fine clothes... Mm. You know it's a Loa, or a spirit, or an avatar, but who?
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe the person didn't introduce himself. Maybe they don't feel, I don't have to.
Absolutely. Mm.
And then I think it would be interesting, it's like, okay, let's research that, and find out what, you know, connect this person. Can we trust them? And then like, well, I guess it's, you know, the Loa of love and beauty and luxury, yeah. so...
You'd have to be careful. You'd have to make it really apparent that you're actually talking to a Loa.
Yeah, once they're familiar with, like...
The idea
of that. And of course, if you're... And again, this is one thing where the metagame can work for you, because a lot, when you say she has, I mean, not a lot of people carry a mirror, you know. And for some reason, she had just...
Well, outside of Japan, the little pocket mirror, I'm thinking, yeah, man, if you get on the train here, everybody's like, holy crap, how many horses is she riding?
I think the only people that do that are called women.
What, she's doing her makeup on the train with a mirror? Right, uh-huh.
Mirror!
You know, like, I say make it apparent, like, I'd even have that Loa riding a guy. A guy walks out in a dress. With a mirror.
I think it would be a dress.
She's the patriot Loa.
Homosexuality?
She actually is.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there is that connection.
But you can make it. Just the point is that,
it has to be made apparent. But I don't think necessarily, once they're familiar with trademark items are the clue to who this is, that then they have to, in the first two sentences, say, oh, by the way, you may also call me the Black Madonna.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, once you do the trademark item, then they don't even have to be attached to people, right? I don't know why you'd be investigating a crime scene, but I mean, you investigate. No, like,
it becomes Disney's Beauty and the Beast, like the comb is talking to you.
No, not that. I'm just saying.
Be
like,
our guest.
No, but let me finish. Like, once you finish that, if they see the item or an associated item at another place, right? Yeah. So, example, hey, there's a shot of rum. On that altar.
That's really interesting.
Like, why is there a hand mirror over here? Other things like that. Then they start questioning, okay, are we dealing
cigar
with this
and an ashtray?
Do we have to start thinking about this connection here? So, I think that could be pretty fun and interesting.
Yeah, it would be
too good.
Yeah. We just can't make Wayne's dad in the story. Yeah. Was Wayne's dad here?
What do you mean we can't not make Wayne's dad in the story? Cool.
Or like if you offered alcohol to, like, at least there's at least one Loa that won't drink alcohol. I think it's Aizon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And she is quite quiet. Like where her, I think when a lot of times when one of the Loa possesses or rides one of their horses, one of the people, it's quite, as you can imagine, like somebody possessed and speaking in tongues or almost like a fit or a seizure, whereas some of them are quite quiet. But you could tell is that you offer them alcohol and see if they take it. And if she doesn't take it, then you know, I know who this is.
Okay.
And you could also have it where the spirits or the gods or whatever communicate through the items. Like you look in, I mean, we all know like a magic mirror where you can see things, the future.
So you mean the item would actually kind of like talk or just where everybody could hear or kind of like talk?
I mean, you could have it where you could talk or you receive an envelope. Or a little package, and you open it up, and it's got sunglasses. And then you put on the sunglasses, and you get, like, a...
vision?
Like, they live, no. You get true sight. You get a vision of something, or a message. And, yeah, because sunglasses are visual, then it would probably be better that it would be a visual message. Or you get, like, a bottle of rum or something.
Or have the character written.
You could have it where they're written. That's a little bit different than what I'm saying, but that's a good idea. But I mean, if you drink the rum, then you know how, you know, like stuff, you get ideas in your head, and it's from that.
I don't think that suggestion of having the character be written, I don't think it would work on a regular basis, but I think it would work really well once.
Okay, like, that's your idea.
Yes.
That's different. Okay.
So
we're switching to have the character written?
Well, no,
you put on the straw hat and then you're written?
Well, I was thinking, like, for example, like Wayne said, if they were maybe investigating crimes or something and they eventually went to a voodoo practice at night and then one of the characters blacks out and wakes up and everybody was saying, like, all night you were drinking rum and, you know, wearing sunglasses and smoking a cigar, but you don't smoke, what's up? Kind of thing. I think it could be pretty interesting as a kind of a... Maybe a good way to show that there's something to this.
So you would have the person black out and then not play it?
I think that would be kind of hard.
Exactly. I think
you'd have to do a lot of explain. I can understand about the blacked out player and having NPCs or something, but if all the other players then have to have it explained to them,
right,
they don't see what he did.
I'm not sure
or
how
she did.
It would be really cool if you could do it where like one person, one of the players doesn't have memory of that, which is kind of maybe what would happen. But logistically in the game, I don't know how you would do it where one person isn't there for a session.
If somebody can't make a session, then you're like, okay, if you're trying to say, well, who's going to get possessed, and somebody can't make it, then you're like, well, it's him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Or actually, you know what? That if you had a group that was like that, where you have people with bad schedules that sometimes can't show up,
man,
there you go.
No, exactly.
What would be the adventuring Loa troop? Where like, no, all right, well, how many people can't make it today? All right.
So remember, if you like, can't make it, you're gonna get ridden by Loa. No promises. Somewhat happens to you.
And some Loa don't want to leave. We kind of touched on a little bit in the overview, but one of the other things that kind of jumped out at me, I guess in terms of like modern thing, was the fact that regular people can become Loa, mm-hmm. sort of similar to the way the people are become saints, after they die.
You see that more in fantasy.
Mm.
Like if your cleric gets high enough, then basically they're a god or a demigod.
Yeah. Mm.
Dark Sun had the Dragon Kings. You know, they became so powerful that they had their own priesthood.
Right.
But in a modern setting, is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I was thinking
or
more
even
a
like
modern
a
setting.
Future setting.
Yeah, or a future setting. I'm just thinking, like, I don't know if I would do that with, like, the PCs. Like, I don't know if I would set up the characters to have this ultimate destiny of becoming sort of like a Loa or a Spirit. But it could be, like, I would maybe do like an NPC or. I don't know. I just thought it was kind of interesting that regular
Maybe
people
I'll go
are
way off the wire here, but how about you make a game where all the characters are Loa?
They call it Scion.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Well, yeah, they did. White Wolf made Scion where you start as
a spirit or as
No,
a
well, you're
god?
Like in that one Loa are kind of they're treated as like a pantheon, kind of like a god, like alongside like the other mythological
because you basically advance to godhood. And actually, within that game, they make a reference to how the Loa really understand what it was like to be Scions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't forget because they've been, like, recently raised, I guess you could
say. Because Voodoo was sort of such a recent religion compared to the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So they were more so than the Greek or Egyptian or North pantheons.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of remember what it was like to be human and then raised to be a Loa.
So
that entire game, which looks really good. It is kind of based around that concept.
Yeah, you keep talking about it, Wayne. I got to check it out.
Yeah, all right.
I'm even thinking if you had something like that, and again, to broaden it, is if your bad guy is a god or a kind of a patron saint, if you will, they're playing a role within the pantheon or within the faith. Can you really, like, kill them or eliminate them? Because who cares if they're evil?
Yeah.
I'm playing a role. This is what I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm needed.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas a villain, a straight up villain can't argue that, oh, you need me to rape all those people and kill those people.
I always fall back on that one.
Yeah. But it's a horrible thing.
I'm not disagreeing with that. Oh, I love the way you made me sound like, no, that's acceptable. What are you talking about, villain?
I'm really impressed how you turned that jab right back around. Like,
man.
Yeah, but whereas a god, or I'd like to see that done more in just regular games, is where the priesthood's like, look, we don't worship an evil god, or you may say it's an evil god, but what does that mean to the god?
Right.
Good and evil. But that's their role.
Mm.
That's what they do. So why are you coming after us? We're fulfilling a role just like the farmer growing the crops and that. It's all part of the same thing.
Yeah, that'd be pretty interesting to do. Or at least like a nice rationalization for having a bad guy.
Yeah, and then there could be like pretty severe consequences. Like, I mean, if they're a Loa, then they're not necessarily a god, so they're, let's say they're easier to kill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just breaking it down game-wise. But if you kill if you're fixating on the fact that Baron Samiti is the god of death and you see that as a bad thing and you get rid of him, but he's also got the healing aspect.
Mm, right.
And although there seems to be a lot of overlap between him and that Baron Lacroix. There's some other... I guess all the Baron ones are death.
There's a lot of...
But let's say he's the only
so
one.
Many
yeah, there's
Loa.
So many. And there's a lot of the Loa have multiple names.
But what if you, like, get rid of the god of death, then there's no death, and all the repercussions that happen there.
That's really interesting.
It's a little off.
No, but that's a good point. There's an interesting thing. The other thing about what Baron Samiti and the gods of death is they actually ensure that bodies rot once they're put in the ground so that they don't come back as zombies.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. That's kind of their purpose. Or the other thing is, you could even do kind of like a story like this in game. The belief is that if Baron Samiti refuses to dig a grave for you, you don't die.
Hmm.
So there's been some, like, stories about, you know, not sort of tricking, but sort of convincing the Baron to not dig your grave.
As in, like, a curse, like Jack-O-Lantern?
No, as in, not so much like a curse thing, but it's like, you know, when you die, he digs your grave for you. But if you can convince him to not dig your grave, then you'll just sort of continue to live.
Hmm.
So people who are, like, sick, you know, they often pray to Baron Samedi so that he doesn't dig the grave, therefore keeping him alive. So it's not more like a negative thing.
Or you can get him drunk.
Yeah, I would say get him drunk, yeah. Appease him enough with, you know, some Cuban cigars, and he might not dig your grave.
Yeah, you know, I know we've avoided it, but, yeah, I mean, you did mention about the zombies. Mm. So I think, yeah, that's an interesting part of the faith, the zombification, or the zombies that they had. And what I like, and what actually I did get out of The Serpent and the Rainbow, is the fact that kind of the alchemy or the chemistry behind it,
mm-hmm.
where is these people, they make these potions. And I know, you know, you kind of have these, like, hedge wizards and they do put together these little, I don't know, natural healing things.
I believe that's actually called hoodoo, H-O-O-D-O-O, kind of the hedge magic.
Yeah, but I liked the fact, like, and what that botanist did is, like, researching the actual chemistry behind it. And I thought, yeah, why not? It seemed to be such a nice synergy between science and religion.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, we associate zombies with voodoo, and you're saying that, you know, it's kind of a black mark and kind of a stereotype.
Mm.
But I really like that, and somehow if you could combine different science behind the religion instead of traditionally divorcing them and saying it's like, oh, it's magic or it's faith. But it's no, it's just, it's knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there was even that part in the movie where I forget the character's name, but kind of the botanist character, while he's making the potion, I believe what the guy's name was, like, Mozart? The guy that was...
Yeah, Mozart. Yeah.
He said, he you know, he doesn't have a PhD or he didn't go to Harvard, but he could teach those guys a lot, you know?
Yeah, just the voiceover.
Yeah. Nah, cheesy or not, it just kind of backs up what you were saying.
Yeah. So he learned that, and it just if you know, kind of you draw the curtain, you know, you look behind the curtain and you find, like, oh, this is what it is. This years are the formulas, and a lot of times, excuse me, even like in a fantasy setting, you have your priests and you have your alchemists.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
why not put them together? Combine them. You know, if you had like a face with that was maybe all of the face, and they have just different formulas and potions and that. Instead of like, oh, I mix this potion and blessed it, or whatever. No, it's all of these different things. Now, if you mix it wrong, you know, bad things can happen. And I just really like that. I'm not sure how much you could incorporate that, but I just thought it was a very simple way of showing that, like, science and religion and working it together instead of, like, kind of the quasi, you know, steampunk and blessing, or like the very elaborate 40K of
the technology god.
Yeah, the Mechanium. Is that how you pronounce that?
I forget.
You know, blessing, you know, tanks and stuff. But it's just, we mix it up. Yeah, how do we make zombies? Oh, like this.
Hmm.
Take a blowfish, mix it with a little bit of that.
Yeah, poison frog.
A little pepper.
So also speaking of
that time was awesome.
Blacken the blowfish.
So speaking of zombies, I actually kind of liked the zombie character from the movie.
Yeah.
I thought he was kind of a good or an interesting character because, you know, he's not a zombie in the traditional sense of the word. He just had this zombification thing done to him where, and, you know, everybody assumes he's dead, so he kind of accepted that to the point where he said, I don't have a place in the real world anymore, and he kind of lived in a graveyard and was kind of a bit over the edge, but not evil in the traditional sense of a zombie, just kind of like, this is what I am now, this is what happened to me.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you think about, like, you're a necromancer, and they raise zombies, the undead kind, and then you kill the necromancer, and you kind of think they're all going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, like the living zombies, in the person, I mean, if you kill somebody, but they're still under this formula, you got to wait till the formula rides out,
right?
Or they're under some sort of poison or toxin. So you conceivably kill them, and maybe they're like automatons, and they just stop. Maybe you can control them now because they just follow any commands.
Yeah. So what system would you guys use for this?
I think any system that could handle the mundane, I suppose, because a lot of this, World of Darkness, Scion, which is similar to World of Darkness, of course, GURPS.
Well,
sorry, I don't know what.
See, I was thinking that this would be a really cool way to like reskin Changeling, in that Changeling has all the Changeling powers have that mechanic where you can make a bargain or do some kind of special action to do it. It'd be interesting if you have to appease whatever Loa the power is linked to be able to use it. The point of like having a shot of rum in the morning or something like that.
it's before noon. Yeah, I know. I got to do this.
Yeah. It's not my alcoholism. It's my Loa. Yeah.
Or you have to have a comb with you in order to do it. It's a little bit kind of like the old component system, but maybe if you did it in a more strict fashion, in a World of Darkness, more mundane sense.
Actually, now that you said the old component thing, that would be kind of interesting. I think you could do like a twist on that, rather than sort of not having to like consume these items. But even though the items themselves don't have any power, I could see you kind of needing to have certain items to make certain powers, work.
Yeah, channeling kind of.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Or that would make kind of an interesting character, right? You have to kind of have all these things on you.
Oh, yeah, definitely the components. I mean, there's the trademark items, or what we talked about, the chemistry behind it. All of those can lend themselves to the components. Yeah, I agree. I think it actually, one problem we did have with Changeling was who you have to make bargains with. And that. But if you have, like, you have the Loa, which are pretty neutral. There's good, bad, some of them.
You could almost just substitute the fairy, the fae, right away with them, the gentry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm. Have their little hierarchy, and there's different subgroups of Loa.
Yeah,
I
mean, if you families. Play,
yeah, different families. Like, the name escapes me. Mm-hmm. It begins with a G.
It's like Gedi or something. G-H-E-D
oh, yeah, no, yeah. Guede.
I don't know. Anyway,
the Dambala, the Guede. Guede. Something.
Something. I think. They
would be the Loa of Death, mm-hmm. so they have that little group, and you know how like World of Darkness likes to have their set groups,
yeah.
their vampire clans, mm-hmm. their werewolf tribes, and then you just have their different Loa groups, and I guess you're all related to that.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if now we're just kind of going back to Sion.
I don't know, like not having taken a look at Sion, yeah. it might be the perfect system for it, but. Just from what we've talked on so far, I think Changeling would work really well.
Well, I think Changeling would probably work well if you're doing sort of like a general thing, where...
Also, it's got that mundane element. Like, I think this wouldn't fit as well in fantasy as it would in a more down-to-earth kind of campaign.
Actually, now that you said that, I think it would be pretty cool to do a fantastic voodoo pantheon. That would be kind of... You could do all kinds of interesting stuff with that.
I suppose, but I don't see high fantasy for it, just because there's not the powers, you know. Like Christianity, you have, you know, the burning bush, and you have lightning and floods and great powers.
So are you going to believe more the burning bush and the lightning, or like a person who actually talks to you?
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Like the kind of a fantasy game, the columns of fire and magic missiles, I don't see fitting in that well with
I could see the Loa as saying, you know what, we don't need to be that flashy.
Which I agree, but that kind of takes away the high.
Do you mean? Sorry, can I just clarify, yep. Wayne? Do you mean like they're the only pantheon within the fantasy world, or they're one of the pantheons?
Ah, no, mentioning that I could see.
I don't know. I guess you could maybe do either, and there would be different things based on which one you went with.
Yeah, because you know, they call like Papa Legba the voice of God. That's pretty. That can be pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were the only pantheon and the only fate, is that... And that's just one thing sometimes about with... I guess the default's Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. And they have a pantheon. But your powers aren't necessarily really strictly related to your god.
Yeah.
But I would say if you're gonna apply like a real-world pantheon, you maybe be more strict on what powers you get, depending on which god you worship. So if you were part of like Papa Legba's group or... priesthood or whatever, then everything is like around gates and the voice of God. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're part of Baron Samedi's, things are around death and healing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I guess, like the necromancer. So, I mean, how much do you want to scale that up? Or scale that down?
Yeah,
it's your choice.
Story. You can
yeah.
do anything you want with it.
Yeah. I just like you would bring certain elements to it that would make it, not just the names, you know. You know, Baron Samedi is just not your generic name for the
god
your
of death.
Your god of death, but a lot of times the god of death is very, well, I guess we'll say standoffish or very remote, whereas yours is now he's this crass guy and he has a rival and it's Baron Lacroix. I'm not sure that they're really rivals. Their personality is quite different. One's suave and sophisticated. One is very crass.
Yeah.
That seems to be a running theme in a lot of the stuff I read, is that kind of like the hot, aggressive versus kind of the relaxed.
Yeah, they're kind of breaking into different families.
Yeah, yeah. They're actually, yeah. There is a very warlike family. I forget the name.
I think it was the Ogo.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I have Ogo dash aggressive written in my
notes. Right. So yeah, no, I think a lot of times in the, you know, when we make our own settings and you make your, you know, sometimes it can seem very, I don't know, very vanilla, very plain. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that however young voodoo is, it's centuries.
Yeah. And it's got millions
and
of people.
All of these people have collaborated, mm-hmm. added to it. And when we talk about other pantheons in later episodes, mm-hmm. you're just going to think all of these different stories and that. And just why not use them?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there is the downside that if you do use them, then players might know more about them than you, and argue that point.
But, I mean, if you're applying, I agree. But if you're applying it to, you're taking the voodoo and Loa, and you're applying it, and you're making it the pantheon, let's just say the pantheon of your fantasy world, it's yours now.
Yeah.
And you're using all that richness to your advantage. And if somebody wants to say, oh, but, you know, Baron Samedi has sunglasses, and you're like, do you see any sunglasses in this world? No.
And that's the way that you should do it, too, is, like, if you want to make your own, really do make it your own.
Yeah.
I have this vision of elves dressed in skeletal makeup now.
That would be so cool.
I thought so, too, with, you know, smoking whatever version.
Yeah, and the elves, the elves cheated Baron Samedi. And for some reason, he won't dig graves for them.
Ah.
So there's some sort of deal.
Nice,
like,
nice.
Like maybe they do something all the time, you know, like, or maybe they tricked him in the past, and that explains their immortality.
That's pretty cool.
But yeah, that would sound really cool.
That's pretty nifty.
Yeah. I don't know about the gatekeeper, how we do the other ones.
Maybe it's overly stereotypical, but man, I imagine a cigar chomping dwarf would just be a fun character to play.
Nah. Dwarfs have long lives too.
Yeah. So, hoodoo, voodoo, we do.
So, yeah.
All right.
So, this was our first Pantheon Pandemonium.
Pantheon Pandemonium!
Thank you, Randy.
2011!
Sorry. Oh, I didn't get it first. You were doing, like, WWE.
I wasn't, actually. I was just yelling because the word pandemonium.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
I'll make it echo in post, and then it'll be awesome.
Oh, yeah. Friday.
Wednesday night.
Sunday,
Raw.
Sunday. All the gods clash.
Yeah, maybe at the end. Rumble! But, yeah, so hopefully we'll do more of these.
Yeah, so we started with, not obscure, but maybe not one of the big three, we'll say, of Egypt, Norse, or Greek. But we will be doing the big three next. One of the big three next. Yeah. We'll leave the surprise for them. All right.
Check out those forums at www.idlereadhands.com. That's actually the podcast, but click the forums buttons to go there. Yeah, send us a mail with any comments, any link on Facebook, all that other good stuff.
Yeah. Cool.
See you next time.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.